Is your family a success?
Is there even a measure for family success?
We think there is. And with a 20-year track record of success, we're going to show you how to bless your family with success in your health, relationships, and finances. I'm Steve Keen.
And I'm Katie Keen. And along with some awesome guests, we are going to give you our secrets to family success. Welcome to Family Success Secrets.
Hello, everybody. Today, we have Kimberly Beam Holmes with us. She has applied her master's degree in psychology for over 10 years, acting as the CEO of Marriage Helper. And she is also a wife and a mother. And she loves to research the ways that attraction affects people personally and the relationships that they hold dear. She has videos, podcasts, and a following of over 200,000 people a month. And all of them are making changes and becoming the best that they can be. She's currently working on her PhD in psychology and is passionate about the topic of marriage. Kimberly, thank you for being here with us today. We are really excited to have you.
I am excited to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, our pleasure. All right. So how did you become interested in the topic of marriage?
Great question. So to answer this question, I'm going to have to go back quite a while, but follow me with this story. So back in the 1980s, or actually back in 1969 was the year that my parents got married. And in 1969, my dad was a speaker. He was actually also a preacher and was traveling all around the country. And for the next 15 years, he actually became a really well-known speaker. And I had two older sisters that were born during those first 15 years of my parents' marriage. And, but about in the mid 1980s was when my dad started to experience some problems, isn't the right word. There was controversies, I guess, occurring in the world that he was speaking in, especially in the church world. And he took one side, other people took another side, and he started to get ostracized. And my mom, being a very steady person, if anyone knows anything about the DISC profile, she's a person who hates conflict, just loves peace, wants everyone to just get along. And she would say to my dad, "Why don't you just back off of the stance that you have?" To which my dad said, "No, like, this is what I believe. I'm not backing off." And she didn't disagree with him. She just wasn't necessarily on his side. And all of a sudden, my dad began to feel like everyone in the world was against him, including his own wife, which left him very susceptible to the woman who walked into his office the following week and began to say, "I don't know why people are angry with you. I think you're doing the right thing. I support you. I respect you. I think all of these things." Ultimately, they ended up having an affair. My dad ended up leaving my mom, divorcing her, leaving my two sisters. They were divorced for 3 years. Now, during those 3 years, my dad had gone from being a very successful, well-known person. His speaking schedule was booked 6 years out.
Wow.
Before he got found out about the affair and ended up getting fired and all of the things that should have happened to him. But that's how successful he was. He went from that to living in his car, becoming bankrupt, becoming a drug addict. When he would get invited to people's houses, he would steal their pain medicine, particularly Valium. He became an alcoholic. Ultimately, after somewhere in those 3 years, ended up in the hospital with blood alcohol poisoning and was told he might not make it through the night. And it was at that point that he realized, this is not the greener grass that I thought was on the other side. And even more than that, I do not like the person that I've become. I'm not the same person that I was 3 years ago. I want that person back. I want my family back. And so he called my mom, who was dating at the time, was dating another guy, and their relationship was apparently going well. And he said, "Will you take me back?" She said, "Give me 2 weeks to think about it." During that 2 weeks, she called everyone she knew, family, friends, all of them said, "Don't do it. You can't trust him again. You can't do, once a cheater, always a cheater," all of those things. But she would say to you this day, "I knew in my heart that Joe was a good man who had done a lot of bad things, but I believed it was the right thing to do to try and put our marriage back together." And so they did. And so they remarried. They fell back in love after they remarried. That always catches people. They're like, wait a minute. They didn't love, they weren't in love. They were not in love when they got remarried. They loved each other. Like kind of the way they would describe it is they loved each other like a brother or sister because they still co-parented and had these kids together, but they figured out how to fall back in love and they figured out how to make their marriage work the second time. Mm-hmm. And so from that remarriage, they decided two things. The first was they decided they wanted to have a celebration of their second marriage, which ended up being me. And the second thing that they decided was we want to do something to help other couples not have to experience the pain of divorce that we have had to experience. And so about 10 years after their second marriage is when my parents actually started Marriage Helper. And so my dad originally started Marriage Helper with this 3-day workshop that has been around since 1999, is still around to this day. We've made the content better. But since 1999, our 3-day workshop has had over a 70% success rate at saving marriages. And it is incredible. And so from there, so how did I get involved with Marriage Helper and having a passion for marriage? It's because I've realized, and especially after being married myself, that I owe my life to two people who were willing to do what it took to put their marriage back together and to make it work. On the other side of that, I also see how it impacted my older sisters. So my oldest sister is mentally handicapped and she doesn't have quite the same reaction to the divorce as my middle sister. And so Angel, she's my oldest sister who's mentally handicapped. She just is happy all the time, loves that my parents are together, doesn't really ever understood why they separated. She's mentally not capable of understanding all that. But my middle sister, Joanna, she was 7 when my dad left, was 10 when he came back. And to this day, she still experiences the negative effects of my parents' divorce, even though they came back together and my dad made all of the amends and they have an amazing relationship, but she still has some of those things that just happened, those things that she told herself and the ways that the divorce affected her that still affects her to this day. So why I'm passionate about marriage, how I got into this. I never thought this would be what I would go into. I was getting my master's in marriage and family therapy and started working part-time at Marriage Helper 10 years ago this year. And as I started doing that, I began to realize, man, when I am in one-on-one with couples in my counseling practicums, it is so frustrating. I don't see change. I'm not seeing progress. Like this, it's very difficult to do the deep work one-on-one. But then I would go to these weekend workshops and I would see the transformation that would happen within 3 days of these couples. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to make this grow so that more couples can experience the hope and reconciliation of the marriages that we're able to work with. So I saw the vision of what it could be. I caught the passion, especially from my own marriage and realizing marriage isn't easy. Like you actually need to be intentional and work on it because it's the most, I believe fully that it is the most important earthly relationship that we have.
Sure.
Is in the marriage. And that's how I got involved. That's how I got started. And that is what I currently do to this day. And so yesterday of the day of this recording, my parents celebrated their 53rd first wedding anniversary. And next Tuesday, they will celebrate their 35th second wedding anniversary.
Wow. That is so cool. And what an incredible story and testimony that they have.
Oh, yes. So many people will say, because my dad is the speaker, he has his PhD. He's the one who's typically seen, but he will be the first to say that my mom is the one who is the hero of the entire story. And that my mom is the one who's the strongest woman in the world, right? Like she took on a lot. She forgave a lot. She worked through a lot, but because of what she has done, not only do I exist, but literally thousands of marriages have been saved because of a decision my mom made 35 years ago.
That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Quite the testimony to mom.
Yeah. And what a neat way to take their journey of brokenness and hurt and pain and to take that reconciliation and everything that they learned and to turn it into something beyond just themselves and beyond just their own well-being, like to actually reach out to others. Oh, that's so beautiful.
I know.
Wow. So I know that you are super passionate about marriage. Like you said, you think it's the most important relationship on earth. So can we dig into that?
Yeah, absolutely. We can. When I was doing my master's in psychology, what I wrote my thesis on for my master's degree was the effects of divorce on children. So I was able to see through the research that when divorce happens, there are so many things that a child goes through. We already know that it's really important. So there's a very popular theory out there now. It's very popular kind of in pop culture now, but it's been around since the 1940s, 1950s, called attachment theory. And what we know from attachment theory is that it's very important that a child has a stable, secure, specifically, especially maternal caretaking relationship, but even both parents, a safe, secure, loving home that they grow up in. This affects a lot about what their future relationships are going to look like. It's because now I'm summarizing and synthesizing a lot of research into one right here, but it's because children need to be modeled what to do in a relationship. And when they're able to see two parents who are able to work through things, not always agree. In fact, if you look at the research, the worst thing that can happen for a child with two parents is that their parents divorce and stay in high conflict. That's the worst thing that can happen for a child. And that's typically what happens when a couple divorces, like they divorce and hate each other and they talk bad about each other to the kids behind each other's backs. There's a bunch of just pent up anger about the two of them. That's the worst thing a child can experience because they are not learning how to have healthy relationships at all in that scenario. The best thing that can happen for a child, according to the research, is that a child is able to see their parents have conflict and learn how to resolve it. Not necessarily agreeing on what they have fought about. If you look at the research of Gottman, then 69% of the things that couples fight about are never going to be resolved in that sense. But how are they coming back together and repairing after a conflict has happened? That's the best thing that can happen for a child. And then in the middle is the parents stay together and never fight. And so the child never gets to see how to do this, or the parent divorcing and still having an amicable relationship. That's kind of in the middle. So that's the best and the worst. And so from this, I begin to see this is clearly something that, and especially the older, the generations that we're seeing now, we're starting to see a lot of the children who, because of no fault divorce, which began happening in the 70s and 80s, divorce really began to take a spike during those times. And now you have the kids of that generation who are in marriages but saw their parents divorce. And now they're saying, well, when things get hard, what I was taught is to divorce. And when you look at the history of how psychology views marriage, before the 1950s, psychologists called that era of marriage a commitment-based marriage. Before the 1950s, it was, marriages were made up of people who said, I'm going to do what it takes to do the best thing for the relationship. I'm going to do what it takes to do the best thing for my family. Commitment-based. Starting in the 1960s, 1970s, it started to move into expressive individualism. That's the psychological term for it, which is I'm just going to do what makes me happy. That's the shift that we saw. We still see that. And so now we have all of these people who all are longing for love. We're all longing for that. We want to be seen, heard, appreciated. We want to know someone's going to be there for us no matter what. But the way that we're acting that out in our relationships right now isn't, those two things are not connecting. And so we have people who are just chronically depressed, high loneliness now. I mean, all of the things, all of the negative effects divorce has on the people who experience as well as the kids. And so all of this, I told you I was going to get on a soapbox about why I believe marriage is important because, and so when we take all of this and we see it, we see there's an amazing opportunity to change the way we view marriage to, instead of it being this, what makes me happy in the moment, which could change any moment. And that's not really what any of us want. Instead of it being what makes me happy in the moment, it's what can I do for the best for my family? What can I do that's the best outcome? Not just what I want, but what's best for everyone. When I was speaking with a researcher, his name is Dr. David Matsumoto, a couple of years ago, and it's really fascinating. He was given a grant by the government to study what it would take to end terrorism in the Middle East. Now follow me on this. So what they found in their research was terrorism begins within the home. And if we wanted to end terrorism in the Middle East, we'd have to do it by starting in the home. And his quote was, "It is in the home that people learn to hate, but it is also in the home where people can learn to love." And that is why marriage is the backbone of all of this. Because if you can show your children and society and the people around you how to love within a marriage, that is going to infiltrate into every other relationship a person has in their life, their kids, their family, their friends, their coworkers, society. We see in the research that when divorce spikes, there's actually economic effects, societal effects, cultural effects, all to the negative. And so it's just ample. Now, I'm not saying that you stay together and you just stay unhappy. No, the goal is how do we love each other and have satisfying marriages? Even if they're not always perfect, how can we learn how to have satisfying marriages and let that be what changes our culture? Because I believe that is what will change our culture.
Well, we definitely need that.
Yes.
Because if you looked at any of those factors that you just mentioned, the economy, the way people treat one another, our political problems are all across the spectrum. Everything is on a downward plunge.
Everything.
In my opinion. And I love America big time.
Yeah.
And we need a whole lot of help. Mm-hmm. I am surprised, but not surprised, that so much of that ties back to the condition of the home. Mm-hmm. Because correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know the statistics. But my understanding, I think, is that people aren't even bothering with the marriage that is just going to lead to divorce anyway. So I'm just going to move in with this person that I'm enamored with for as long as I'm enamored with that person. And then sometimes they do make lifelong commitments unofficially, right? But for the most part, it looks like it's just as long as it suits my needs.
Exactly.
And then you've got that. And so people aren't even bothering to get married. And so you have that. And I don't know what that rate is anymore. So I don't know what today's divorce rate is. I don't know what today's rate of cohabitation is. My assumption is both of those numbers are very high and are only fueling the downward spiral that we are all currently
experiencing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I can't tell you the exact numbers, but I can tell you that for the first time, starting in 2020, for the first time, we have experienced the lowest rate of divorce or lowest rate of marriage in 100 years. We are getting married less and less every single year. And it's because of exactly what you said, that people are now living together more. And at some point, the marriage vows changed from "as long as we both shall live" to "as long as we both shall love." And that's just okay, right? Like, it's just, I'm just in it for as long as I feel like I want to be in it. And then I'm just going to move on. And so during COVID, there was this trend called COVID divorces. Have you all heard about this?
No, I haven't. Have you?
You tell me.
So it was in popular magazines. Like, there were articles talking about the benefits of getting a COVID divorce. And here's what that meant. It meant life is hard right now, and we all really need some time to ourselves. So the best solution that you can do is go ahead and get a divorce. And then you get 2 weeks to yourself where you can do anything you want to do. And then you'll have 2 weeks to be a parent, and you can be fully engaged as the parent. And then you can get the best of both worlds. And this was in like national magazines, big media, multiple different outlets. And I was just reading it and thinking, and what are you teaching these children? that number, so many things. Number one, they're not important enough to be in your life every day. Number two, that relationships don't matter. Just do whatever makes sense for you in the moment, right? Like there's so many terrible things we're teaching children in the way that we, in the way that we approach marriage and the dissolution thereof.
We witnessed one of those and I didn't realize that COVID could have been an impact, and that makes perfect sense that it could have been. Mm-hmm. That's really, really sad. And we watched children we love suffer.
Yeah.
We also noticed that there were a lot of folks were beyond the point of being empty nesters. They had been empty nesters for 10, 15 years, whatever the case, I don't know. But, you know, people who are getting to that point where they're getting close to reaching retirement and then calling it up, calling it quits.
Oh, the gray divorce.
Yeah. So what did you call that?
The gray divorce.
I thought you said the great divorce, but you're right. Gray. Okay. I get it. I mean, that's enough of a thing that it has its own term.
Yes.
Because we started noticing that just in relationships around us, not people in our families, but people who are close enough are like, wow, that's really strange that somebody at that point in their life is calling it quits. And now what in the world are they going to do?
And we had a few realtors tell us that that was impacting the types of homes on the market.
Fascinating.
What is the cause of that? Because
the gray divorce.
Yeah. Because you have, those people are from a different era where commitment might have meant a little more when they were getting into the marriage.
Yes. Really fascinating. So this became really popular in the news when Bill and Melinda divorced, right? Because they're kind of in that age range, but the gray divorce is, it's the same basic premise. People are getting into their last chapter of life. And the thought process they have is, I want to do whatever I want to do. I want to go and this expressive individualism. I want to go and be happy doing whatever I want to do. I don't know that I want to just sit and drink coffee and read the newspaper with this man every morning. And our kids are grown, so it's not going to affect them, right? And I have the money to be able to do it if I want to, because we are retired and we've saved up some things. And so in the and so it kind of became a trend several years ago in that population, especially in women, of saying, I don't want to be the housewife anymore. And now that I see the end of my life in the next like 10, 20, 25 years, I just want to do what it takes to make me happy. But instead of bringing their husband into that conversation of, hey, like, what could we do together that's different and new and explore and, you know, do some different things, they instead just said, I'm done. And that's what they're doing. Now, what they're not taking into account at the moment they make that decision, and this was one of the research articles I read of all of the regrets of the women who had done something like that, done the gray divorce, and they didn't take into account when you start getting sick in a couple of years and your mobility becomes limited, who's going to be there to help take care of you? Your kids are going to be mad. You may think it's not going to affect them, but all of a sudden it does affect them, and they are going to be, they're not going to want to do Christmas and Thanksgiving at two different houses now, especially when their whole life it's been at one house. And how does that affect how they now view their own marriage and all of these things? And even the, I mean, the cost of it, a lot of people would say it ended up costing way more than I thought it was going to cost. Now, you know, and so all of these things played into where many of the women would say, this was not what I thought it was going to be.
Wow. Well, in order to avoid that kind of thing, let's say there's a couple listening and they say, well, we're in crisis. What should they do? Because you guys had a success story there with your mom and dad.
Probably so. One that is not common.
For us, it's common because that's the work we do all day. So for like my parents' story is just one representation of thousands like that, because typically the people, unfortunately, by the time they come to Marriage Helper, they've had counselors, pastors, friends, family all say you should just divorce. But there's one person who's saying, but I don't want to. So we're dealing with kind of the hardest of the hard situations and giving those people hope and still seeing their marriage is saved. But ideally you would do something way before it gets to that like bottom of the barrel, end of the rope type of situation. When we look at the research, people typically wait 6 years before they get any kind of marriage help after a marriage problem begins. And if you think about that in any other thing in our life, like a physical ailment, well, if my foot starts hurting when I run and I just wait 6 years, but I keep doing the same things, then it's going to be that much harder to repair it and to get it repaired. So I would have different answers to that question based on kind of where a person is. Like, are you just in a spot right now where you're really not communicating well? Whenever you talk, it seems to end up in a fight. You're starting to realize that you just become more frustrated with your husband or more frustrated with your wife. Or are you at the point where your husband or your wife is like, I'm done, I'm out, I'm gone? Because those are two different ways that you would handle it.
Oh, that's an excellent answer. So I guess another question people might be thinking is, well, if I'm at that point where, you know, communication is broken down and I don't have those feelings, because everyone seems to be so Disney movie kind of mindset, you know,
feeling oriented.
Yes, riding off into the sunset. If that's not there, can they fall back in love again?
Absolutely, they can. Yes. So falling in love is a process. So I'll answer the question this way, because this is applicable to every relationship there is. Falling in love is a process. And if you follow the process, then you can fall in love. But if you stop following the process, then you can fall out of love even when you don't mean to. And the process of falling in love is four steps. So the first step or stage of falling, we call it the love path. So the first stage of love path is attraction. Now, we all get this because typically when we think back to dating our spouses, there was something about them that attracted us to them and attracted them to us. So I'll ask the two of you, Katie, what was it about Steve that attracted him, that was attractive to you?
There were quite a few things. He was so kind and very sincere and genuine, extremely good looking. And and then when I initially met his family as well, to see how well he interacted with his niece and nephew, after already knowing so many character traits about him, you know, and just his good sense of humor, there were a lot of good things that really were attractive.
Steve, what about you for Katie?
Some of the same things, you know. The first time I saw her, I thought, that is a cute girl right there. There's a lovely girl. And, you know, getting to know her, I got to see the depth of her character shined as well. And there were so many of those sort of attributes, because when we met, I was in the Navy and I was stationed in Rhode Island. Her family was stationed in Rhode Island. And in the Navy, the divorce rate is worse than it is in the general population.
Yes.
Right. And so that's always a consideration for a person who is family minded, is that when I get married, I want to marry somebody that will be stable, knowing that I'm going to be on deployment and gone from home 6 months at a time and whatnot. And seeing that, well, one, that she was from a Navy family, so that she would have already experienced that. But just in learning about her, getting to see that, you know, it sort of checks all these different boxes, right? Some of them you don't realize, right? Because at first, you know, if you're in college and you're dating someone, you might just have one or two boxes you want to check. But then as you start thinking about, you know, now I'm getting closer to that age where I would marry someone, these other boxes appear that you want to check. I was like, all right, cool. We're checking a lot of those boxes. So there was much to like there.
Yeah. So both of you, whether you know it or not, we're actually looking at four different areas of the way you were attracted to each other. So, and both of you said parts of these in what you said, but I'll explain. So we call this first stage attraction, but there's four areas, as I said, we call it the pies of attraction. So there's physical attraction, which both of you alluded to in your answers, right? Mm-hmm. And this is typically the first thing we see about someone, but it's not what's going to long-term keep us attracted to someone. Looks are important. They continue to be important as long as we are alive. So it's good to take care of ourselves, but it's not the most important part of attraction. The next part of attraction is intellectual attraction. And this is all about, is this a person that I enjoy talking to? Do we have enough shared interest, enough of a similar background, enough in common that they're my friend? Like, I would want to hang out with them on the weekend, even if we weren't dating. And so, like you had mentioned, Steve, that it was attractive to you that she came from a background that understood what your life was like. That falls right under there. The next one is emotional attraction. Now, emotional attraction is the most important for long-term relationships, and most people don't even realize it is a part of attraction. But emotional attraction is all about, do I evoke emotions within another, the other person that they enjoy feeling? Do they evoke emotions within me that I enjoy feeling? And both of you centered on that. When you were talking about each other, both of you were saying, so Katie, when you were talking about, I went and I saw him and the way he interacted with his family, like I loved that. He was evoking emotions within you that you enjoyed feeling. When you were looking for those stable qualities in her, those are the things you were like, I like this. I like the way that I feel safe around her. She's trustworthy. All of those things mattered. And then the fourth one is spiritual attraction. And this is about having a similar set of beliefs and values. And that when you typically we are attracted to someone who has the same or a very similar set of beliefs and values, or someone we perceive has a greater set of beliefs and values than we do. And so these are the four things that we look for as we're kind of assessing who we're attracted to. But the thing is, these four things, always important. They are what keep us attractive to our spouses and our spouses attracted to us. And so what we say is, I'll get to the other three parts of the love path. But when you feel like everything is going off kilter, you can always go back to working on your pies, because it gives you something you can control, which is you. You can't control your husband. You can't control your wife. You can only control you and what you do. And especially focusing in on, am I doing those things that evoke emotions within my spouse that they enjoy feeling? And this is typically when people, and I'm sure there's even listeners, by me just saying that thing right there, they're automatically thinking, I already know some things that I'm doing that are not evoking emotions that they enjoy feeling. A lot of insight that people can get from that. So once we hit that stage of attraction, again, it's not something we complete and check off the list, but kind of once we know that we're attracted to someone, that's what leads us to want to move further down the love path into the second stage, which is acceptance. Now, acceptance is all about understanding the difference in facts versus feelings. So this is where, and you too may remember situations like this when you were dating, but you start to learn about a person, about their past, about things that they've done, and or about things they feel bad about doing, feel shame about doing, right? And it's in these stories that we learn about our spouses that we're asking ourselves with every story, with all of this information we're getting, do I accept them as they are? Can I accept this person for the things they've done, for the habits they have, for the annoyances they have, without trying to change them? And one of the things that really helps with this is the fact versus feeling. So a lot of times when we're working with couples that hear a difficult story or hear something difficult that their husband or that their wife has done, we will ask them to ask back to their spouse, not to just say, what did you do, but how did you feel about it? Because a lot of times what we will see is that the feeling is going to tell us more about what a person did than what they did. So take the story of my parents, for example. My dad had an affair, left my mom. That's the fact of it. His feeling, thankfully, was, I regret this. It was wrong. I'm not justifying it. He's never justified it. That's his feeling. But his feeling could have been, hey, she wasn't meeting my needs. I did what I wanted to do. Which of those two things are going to tell you two different things about a person, depending on how they feel about what they did, more than what they actually did. That will tell you more about their character. So acceptance is all about, can I accept this person for who they are as they are? Once you get to that acceptance phase, then that's what leads you to move towards the third phase, which is attachment. We've talked some a little bit earlier on this podcast about attachment, but attachment really at its core is trusting that your spouse will be there for you when you need them, no matter what. And we build that attachment with each other through choosing to do the things that put our relationship first, not our own self needs first. And then that leads us to the final step of the love path, which is aspirations. And this is all about creating shared dreams, things that you want to do together as a couple, aspirations that you have for your future. Because as we like to say it, if you don't do something as a married couple to continue to pull you together, then life is going to do everything it can to pull you apart. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see. A lot of these people, like the empty nesters, they'll look around. The common phrase you'll hear is, I just felt like I woke up one day and didn't know who this man was or who this woman was that I was married to, because they hadn't intentionally been doing things to come back together and keep them focused on each other. The aspiration part, the shared dreams part, is kind of the pinnacle of the most satisfying marriages. Most marriages don't have that, but every marriage should, because it's what leads to the most satisfying marriages. So that is an overview of the love path.
That's fantastic. And I'm wondering, like you mentioned, the empty nesters, we've talked about, you know, the COVID issues. We noticed as we were going through the journey of being special needs parents, that mm-hmm. there were a lot more divorces there as well, because mm-hmm. of the extra stress. Like there was extra physical stress, extra financial stress.
There was no end to the things life was doing to pull them apart, mm-hmm. with very little of even opportunity to intentionally mm-hmm. come back together, as you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. A lot of different circumstances mm-hmm. that sort of go above and beyond when it comes to challenges. You know, if you don't have a person to support you by coming to take care of your kid, you can't get out for a date. So how do you, you know, if you're a 24/7 caregiver, how do you even have that date at home? You know, and mm-hmm. I really like how you brought up the different forms of attraction, and that, let's say there's a special needs family listening who is like, we don't live near family, we have no one we can trust, our kid is immune compromised or whatever. They can at least begin working on those elements to yeah. rebuild that attraction mm-hmm. at home while they're caregiving, if they have to. You know, it is possible. It gives a lot of hope.
Yeah, it does. Another thing I thought of as you were saying that is, it is very, there's a whole other level mm-hmm. of stress and just different daily life routines of parents who have special needs kids. And one of the things I'm learning a lot about right now is trust and attunement. So I'm really diving into Gottman's research on that right now. And what I find fascinating is the way that he defines trust. He actually went back to game theory and looked at things such as like the Cuban Missile Crisis in the late 1950s, when that happened, and started looking at how did these people back then, these researchers, these game theorists, run calculations on the most likely ending scenario. And there's a couple of different types of game theory, but what it all boils down to is, if you are of the mindset that the other person is solely going to look out for their own interest, and that you're solely going to look out for yours, then the choices you make are going to be to maximize your gains and minimize your own losses. And you will make vastly different decisions than if your mindset is, I want to maximize both of our gains. So if you view the other person as your opponent, as opposed to being on your side and your ally, it's going to change the way you think about things. And so the way that Gottman has applied this to trust is, he says, he believes, and I agree, I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks now, is that in our marriages, to build trust, the other person has to know that we are going to make a decision that keeps their best interest in mind. Doesn't necessarily mean I have to sacrifice my best interest, but it means I want them to know that I am considering their best interest. Betrayal happens when a spouse starts to believe my spouse is looking out for their best interest over mine. And so you can start to break down all marriage interactions, every single one of them, into, is this trust building or trust breaking? Now, when you were talking about the special needs parents, this is what I thought of. So I can see how in a situation like that, where you are so stressed, and both people are probably just trying to figure out how to take care of themselves, like, how do I get through this day? And if you're not very intentional, like more intentional than other couples, about coming together and having these conversations of, what do you need? Let me share with you what I need, and doing that in a positive way, then you're probably both not meaning to make those decisions of, well, this is what I need for me right now. Like, they can figure it out for a minute. I just need to go and handle this for me right now, and I'll figure out the rest later. But that starts to, if you don't communicate about it, it starts to erode trust, to where over time, both of you are more inclined to just do what makes you happy because it's what you need in the moment. And if you're not intentional about recouping that through what he calls an attunement exercise, then that's what leads to eventually where someone says, so it causes a domino effect of a lot of things. Once trust is broken, it causes negative sentiment override to where all you can see is the negative things in another person. And typically the first negative thing people see is they're so selfish. That's the first thing they'll typically say. And then once you get in that negative sentiment override, you fight more often, you get into that flooding mode more often. Once you're in flooding, it's harder for you to get out of flooding, and you kind of get stuck in this negative conflict cycle. And on and on and on it goes until finally some people rewrite their relationship history in their mind to be, you know what, they were a jerk when I met them, and this is just who they are. They're flawed as a character. I just want out. Like, that's typically how the cycle goes. And I think it's fascinating. I also think it's important for couples to realize things like that, because if you start to realize things way earlier on, you can begin to do the things to fix it before you get to the point of divorce.
Yeah, I agree completely. While you were discussing the stages and levels of people not being able to connect, not being able to communicate because of that stress, I would have to say it stood out to me that I think our couch time that we had, we did a podcast episode. It's way back. It was last year sometime. I think it was episode 21 called Couch Time. And that was a technique that when he would walk in the door, we could do this even with special needs kids because the kids could be in the same room. We would sit down on the couch for 20 minutes. He'd text me before he was coming home. I'd go make coffee or tea or whatever we decided on together. And the kids knew that was our time. Even if they were in the room, they could play with toys, read books, you know, listen quietly to music or an audio. But that was for us to reconnect as a couple. It was free. It was simple. And we just took turns catching up on the day. And it didn't have to be about work. It could be, it didn't have to be about the kids. It could be, but it just kind of allowed us to feel like we were still on the same team, you know, and that each other was a priority. And I think it modeled it to the children as well.
Yes.
And it was very simple.
Perfect. Things like that are so good. It's about the intentionality. Mm-hmm. I don't think it matters as much what you do or where it is or how, you know, how extravagant it is, as much as it is of, are we intentionally connecting?
Yeah.
Ideally every day and just talking. Mm-hmm. It's so important.
Something that also stood out to us over time was just looking at the intent of the other person, because under extreme duress, it can be so easy to snap or find that the other person is actually like, he's so nice and calm. So sometimes if I've had a really rough day, for example, in our experience, it's easy to just like unload the emotions, not because he did something wrong, but because I'm venting, you know? And so I have to be careful to not vent too like hardcore at him, because I don't want to hurt his feelings and make him think he did something wrong. So we've had to very much communicate over the years so that he understood where I was coming from. He looks at my heart intent. If he does something that irritates me, same thing, try to give each other the benefit of the doubt and then talk it through. Otherwise I can see exactly how that spiral can happen. And we've seen it in person too many times over the years.
Yeah. It's unfortunate when it happens. There's still hope. And I fully believe there's still hope, but it really takes at least one of them at first to begin to do things differently. And that can change the relationship.
So I love that you said just one of them, because in many of the relationships we've seen that have dissolved, it's a lot of blaming and not being willing. Well, if he won't, or if she won't, then I won't. So can you touch on that for somebody who's listening, who thinks, wait, you mean I can do something about this myself? Mm-hmm. What can they do?
Yeah, absolutely. Even when we look at the research, it's really fascinating. There was a correlationary causational study. I don't think I said that the right way, but most of the time in research, they will say correlation does not equal causation. But the way this one research study was done, it actually did prove the correlation and causation of these two things. And it was this, that the more a person focused on their own, I can't remember the way that they worded it, but basically it was their own self-esteem, working on themselves to become, to feel better about themselves. It had a direct positive correlation and causation of relationship satisfaction. So that's the good news, that for the people who are saying, but if they don't want to work on things, then there's no reason for me to, or why should I? I think that's the other one. The other one is there's one side of it, which is, but if there's no hope, there's no hope, which there is hope. So let's just put that off the table. And then there's the side of it, which is, but it's not fair. And you're right. Sometimes it's not fair, but love is not always fair. And the good news is, if you're the person who's willing to do the work now in order to make the relationship better, what an amazing opportunity for you. Like, how strong are you for being willing to do this and to see the amazing change that's going to come from it? And your relationship is just going to benefit on the other side. So we can take both those things off the table and then look and say, okay, so what is it you can do? We go back to saying, start on those pies. Ask yourself, am I doing what I can to feel the best that I can physically, intellectually? How can we start talking to each other again about things we have in common? Emotionally, what can I do to evoke these positive emotions in my spouse? Spiritually, am I living in line with my beliefs and values? And what that can look like is, let's say that you have a belief and value of spending time with family, right? Family is the most important thing to me. I want to spend all this time with my family, but really I'm a workaholic. I don't come home until 9 PM. I never have dinner with my family. Those are things that can be spiritually unattractive to your spouse because they signed up for a family person who said they were going to be there, but now this person isn't there. And you're not living in line with those beliefs and values. So asking yourself, because you can start doing those things, you can control your actions and reactions in that way. And then the second part I encourage people to do is about that communication. Stop the fighting. Even when, and we know this from psychology, if you and your spouse are in a cycle of poor communication now, where there's a lot of fighting and a lot of negativity, then if you're the first one to stop it, expect it to get worse before it gets better. Because typically the other person, so if it was me and my husband, for example, if I'm the one who stopped and just said, I'm just going to be calm, I'm not going to respond in my typical way, then he's going to try and get that same response from me he's always gotten. He's not going to understand if all of a sudden I'm calm and chill and saying, I understand how you feel, right? He might push it a little bit more. So expect it to be worse before it gets better. But over time, if you begin to change the dance of the communication and the conflict, then it will begin to soften. And those are two key things that you can begin to do.
Those are excellent things. And they're free.
Free. They're free.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes they'll tell our kids, like, the most powerful thing, I'll say this to them because they're little, some of them are little, the most powerful thing you can do is try to control yourself. Mm-hmm. Because ourselves can be the most difficult person to control.
Absolutely.
So stop trying to control your sibling, focus right on you. And so it's kind of similar when it comes to the marriage relationship. Yeah, it work on us. We have a lot of power. We have enough trouble just controlling ourselves. Start there. That'll keep you busy full time for a while.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I don't really say this on the other teachings and videos I do, but I feel like there's a lot in common with marriage and parenting. Like the way you parent, you don't parent your spouse, but there's a lot about the way that you teach your kids and respond to them and hold space for them, right? Like we do that for our kids, but we don't always take that same way and do it with our husbands or with our wives. And so, yeah, there's a lot to learn on both ends.
And I think it's a lack of awareness, maybe a lack of training or realization that we ought to do that for our spouse, because the longer we're away from our own original family and our parents who maybe did that for us, hopefully, the more our spouse is our, and now, you know, was from the moment of marriage, but even in our mind, is our primary family. They are your family. And we know from being in the military, moving around a lot, you know, home is where you hang your hat. He was my family. I was his family every duty station we went to. Yeah. And so you're right. We should keep that awareness and offer that safety to each other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's key for marriages.
Yeah. And with a mindset shift, I think it's so doable.
I agree, Katie.
Cool. So as we wind up, we want to ask, is there just one more thing that you can give to the listening audience as a, let's say a secret, something they can do quickly that they can implement in their family, either from your personal experience or your professional expertise, something that you've seen that you think, I can explain this in a minute or two, and then folks can implement it maybe kind of quick in their family.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, when you first asked the question, I was like, I have no idea. There's so many things I would say, and none of them are quick, but the more you spoke, this is what came to mind. So this is what I'm going to share. The most important thing you can do, especially in this day and age, is put the phone down, turn the screens off, look your kids, your husband, your wife in the eye, and have conversations. Yes. Go do things, like let them know you are important to me and you're more important than this other stuff that might be calling my name right now, but you're more important. And especially with working from home, the lines are blurry for a lot of people. It can be very difficult. That has been for me the best thing I can do. Like turn off my phone, just go dance with the kids, like hold them, look them in the eye, hold my husband's hands at the end of the day, look him in the eye with no distractions. That's what I would say.
I like it.
I do too. That's fantastic. And that's a hard one.
Not for me.
Mm-hmm. For most people, that is such a hard one, especially for entrepreneurs. He has always been, I will compliment him, because he has always been absolutely a wonderful example and really a backbone in our family in keeping work separate from home life. And when it, yes. And with our military career, that was so important.
If you're going to be gone for 6 months out of the year on a ship on the other side of the planet, you're almost always focused on work, always thinking about home, but you're never at home. And so when I got home, unless it was the president calling, I'm not picking up.
Right. Like, I've given you my time. Now I'm taking mine.
Yeah. But there's no reason that somebody else could not be as deliberate, you know. A job is a job.
Absolutely.
It meant a lot.
Yes. Absolutely.
Find out where to find the secret of these pies.
We need to know, how can everybody who I'm sure is excited to find you and learn more from you, how can they find you?
Yes, you can find me at marriagehelper.com. So that's the company, the organization, Marriage Helper. We have a vibrant YouTube channel that has a ton of free resources there as well. A lot of videos about specific topics that you can go to. We have a podcast. We have several podcasts, actually. So Relationship Radio is everything talking about marriage. My podcast, It Starts With Attraction, is all about those pies and talking about different ways to work on each of those throughout. And those are the best ways to find me and Marriage Helper.
Awesome.
Very good.
Fantastic. Well, I have a feeling a lot of folks are going to go searching YouTube and your website right away. So Kimberly, I can't thank you enough for all of this wisdom and just pouring your heart out for everybody who's listening today.
Thank you both so much for having me on. It was a great conversation.
Yes, it was. Thanks.
Thanks for listening and spending time with us today. If you know anyone who could benefit from this podcast, we would be honored if you would share it. Please rate, review, subscribe, and download.
Head over to podcast.familysuccesssecrets.com to have a top-rated family success secret sent straight to your inbox. We look forward to spending time with you again next week during our next episode. See you then.
Bye, everyone.